Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Downtown D.C. will be very busy this weekend because of several marches and actions on the 56th anniversary of the March on Washington. Seasoned and new voices will be heard, but the issues will be the same. Are we moving the needle when it comes to social justice in America? Well, joining me to talk about this very important issue with her unique perspective on this weekend and beyond is activist and co-founder of Until Freedom, Tamika Mallory. Lines are open if you have a comment, if you have a question. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Tamika, it's an honor to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. This is an incredible platform to come to tonight.
Absolutely. Well, the big platform is going to be this weekend. Lots of eyes and ears on what's happening this weekend. But here's the thing. Are we, as I just asked, are we moving the needle when it comes to social justice? Is marching enough?
Marching certainly is not enough. Marching is one component of a large pot, if you will, of strategy that's necessary to get things done. I'm certainly frustrated in this moment because we understood the moment that we were in at with the last election. We knew that we had a responsibility to remove someone that I think was and continues to be incredibly dangerous to our communities and to this country in general. And that, for me, was Donald Trump. And so we made the decision to go to the polls and to go organize, even living in places like Georgia and other areas around the country, to get a new administration in place, not because we thought that they were going to be the end-all, be-all, that they were going to fix all the issues, because both, the president and the vice president, have already been in office in different capacities for many years, and we're still struggling. And so I was alongside those who were very frustrated, but we said we needed to pick a better opponent. We needed to have someone that was in office that we could at least pick up the phone and call someone in their office, try to fight for our issues and have our voices heard and to be able to advocate for what we need. And we did not have that at all as it relates to the administration, the previous administration. And we had expectations. We still have expectations of this administration. We want to see the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act passed, and we don't want to hear all of the hoopla about who's blocking it. They told us to go to Georgia and win two Senate seats, and we did that. We did that work, and the residents of Georgia, those people who voted, they're the real MVPs for going to the polls, even with all their frustrations. And they said that police accountability would be a part of it, yet nothing has happened. Our voting rights are being stripped away from us, and there's a number of other issues that we want to see addressed. And so, yeah, I'm frustrated we move the needle, but certainly every time we move it, every time we win, there's a backlash. And we've been experiencing this backlash as far as I in my lifetime know, from the time that President Obama first got elected. We've been experiencing this backlash of those people who don't want to see our communities succeed.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that you mentioned a piece of this, do you think that the more progressive political powers were caught flat-footed by the conservative-controlled legislatures after the 2020 election when we saw these sweeping voting changes, when they were enacting these laws that basically some would say moved us back to Jim Crow or tried to in some places like Texas, for example?
Would I say that they were swept by, I think the problem is, and I talk about this often, actually think that we, and when I say we, I am a Democratic voter. Mm-hmm. I obviously support the Democratic Party. And to be clear, before I even finish my statement on that, you know, there are people who are out here saying they're upset with the Republicans. Well, for me, I don't vote for the Republicans, and I don't invest in their campaigns. I don't donate to them. So I have no expectations outside of a moral standing, and we can see that too many of them do not have or take seriously their moral obligation for our community. And so I don't have any dealings with them. But the Democrats, that's who I vote for. Those are the individuals that I have helped to put in office. And I think we play a little nice too much. It's almost like we don't realize the level of battle that we're in. And of course, there are some who want to go along to get along because they want to continue to get elected. They've gotten comfortable in their position. Some of the more longstanding folks that have been in office for a long period of time, you know, they're pretty comfortable where they are. They don't deal with police issues every day. Their communities are not riddled by gun violence. Even when they say, well, that's in my district. They're not living there in the midst of these issues. And they're not facing eviction. They're not facing losing their job. They're not in a position where they can't go and get mental health support when they need it. And so as a result of that, they're so comfortable in believing that the system, you know, maybe it's not working exactly as it's supposed to, but we've got to compromise and we can bring people together. It almost makes me want to scream when I hear President Biden talking about working across the aisle and bringing people along with us that have never been for us. And they continue to show on every issue that he's been dealing with since just recently becoming president, that they weren't with us then, and they're still not with us now. And yet we have individuals like President Biden, Joe Manchin, Sinema, I forget her first name, that are out there talking about trying to bring people to the table so that they can help work on protecting the lives of those who have been put in danger by the very people that they want to work with.
Yeah, you're talking about Kristen Sinema, but please go right ahead. Yes,
exactly, Kristen Sinema. So I think that a part of it is, you know, we actually have been duped into believing that if we play the nice party, the nice role, we do it this way and we try to look at it and say we're going to do things the right way, that somehow that's going to get the real courageous work and the serious work that needs to happen to get it done. And it's not. And, you know, let me tell you one thing I will say about Donald Trump. As much as I despise the fact that he ever became president, and I see where Donald Trump has taken this country in the wrong direction. I see where racists and white supremacists have been emboldened. I see where certain communities have been impacted and harmed because of the language that he used and the rhetoric. And, of course, you know, even the policies that they put in place, the fact that judges were flipped in this country. We have federal judges that have been put on the bench in position around this country with strong conservative views. And that's going to impact us for generations. So a lot of people from the surface side, you know, they said, well, you know, he was willing to sit down and talk about policing. Yeah, but let's pull back the curtain and see what was going on the other side. So I despise those things. But I will tell you that one thing I do appreciate about Donald Trump is that he said what he said and he meant that he didn't care who liked it. And he was going to do what he had to do to force it to make it happen. I want to see the Democrats go and do that for righteousness. No, I don't. You know, his was evil. His was wrong. And certainly we have to stop it. But I want to see the Democrats take a page out of his book and go and force individuals that if Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema and others don't respect the principles of the Democratic Party and they're looking to work with other people across the aisle that don't respect us, then you make sure that you shame them and that you treat them in such a way that allows them to know that we demand that they come to the table with us. Because guess what? Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have a problem.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about all of the issues that will likely be addressed this weekend, the 56th anniversary of the March on Washington. There won't just be one march. There won't just be one action. There will be a series of events, a series of actions this weekend. There is an estimate of some 20,000 people who will be participating this weekend. And I'm talking to a founder of Until Freedom and activist Tamika Mallory. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, this time last year, we were coming off of the murder of George Floyd. It was only a few months old. And of course, we were there for the March on Washington, the anniversary. So now his killer has been convicted, and yet we are still dealing with the issue of police reform, of transforming, reimagining, changing what policing is in this country. And yet just 24 hours ago here in the District of Columbia, there was a man who was shot and killed by a police officer right in the heart of this city, right on New York Avenue. And the people are still reeling from that. And the D.C. Police Department is still, you know, struggling to address this issue. What do you think outside of, you know, federal reform, do you believe needs to happen to fix this issue around policing in this country?
Well, I think folks have to continue to fight on a local level. I mean, all politics are local. We know that. There is no way that you can go to Washington and fight for your concerns and not deal with the person who's a legislator right there on your block or in your community. Those things have to be connected. So I think the local piece is important. But when we look at something like voting rights and voter suppression specifically, what we understand is that on a federal level, if we don't fix this issue, it's going to trickle down to everything from city council races to the district attorney races in your community. And so the local and the federal have to be connected. And people can't have to understand the power on both sides. We also have to make sure, and I talked about those individuals, excuse me, I'm losing my voice. I've been talking so much today.
I want to give you a break about that too, but please,
okay.
Go ahead.
It's okay. Yeah, so, I was talking just a few moments ago about these individuals who've gotten comfortable in their offices and in these elected positions around the nation. Some of them need to be voted out. It's time for them to go. We need to put more Cori Bushes and more Jamal Bowmans and Ayanna Pressleys and Alexandria Ocasio's and others like that in office. We need to take more Ilhan Omars to office. And you know what? In order to do that, we have to replace some of the individuals who are there, which means that some of us are going to have to run for office. And I say us very nicely and kindly because I certainly am not the one who wants to run, but I am the one who can help raise money. I can help to uplift your platform and get you out there. I have a number of people who I've helped get elected to office around the country, and that's where I'm best in my job. But there are some people who can run for office, and they should, but they cannot run if the rest of us don't put our $20, $30, $40 in the pot to help them be competitive in these races. And so I think that's a big thing that we've got to focus on is how are we going to shepherd in a new group, a new crop of those who can go and will not be afraid to challenge the status quo and get something done.
Yeah. Let me go to the phone lines real quick, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jay, calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling, Jay. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you to give me a time to talk.
Real quick.
Yeah, I speak French. But how long will we march? How long will we protect? A job is there. We need to get back to work first before we can do something. Because we vote for senator, we vote for congressmen. When they get there, they don't care about us. Why we can't get back to work before we can complain?
Okay.
We have a university who is for black. We have so many things we can get there and get it done. We need to go back to school. We need to get back to work. Will we get there? Obama get there. Why? Because he dreamed big.
Well, Jay, let me see if Tamika can address your issue. But I think, thank you for your call. He makes a great point, which is the point that I was making at the very beginning. You know, is marching enough, or is there something else that needs to be done outside of marching? Can black people, can people of color, can people affected be the new great silent majority for progressives?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yes, I agree that much more has to happen. And it's already happening. People, we say that, you know, black women are becoming the fastest growing population of entrepreneurs in this country. That is an important part. We're now learning from so many of our people. I was just looking at my brother 19 Keys page the other day where he's teaching people about investing in stock and looking at the crypto stock trading.
Cryptocurrency, yes.
Cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. That's the word. All of that. So on the economic side, yes, we can take the wealth that we've been able to grow and put it together, be more unified in that so that we can educate ourselves, so that we can grow crops and food and take care of our communities. And we also need to run for office. As I said, all of those things need to happen. The marching and the rallying only becomes a part of where we get together to raise our voices and let the world know this is a problem for us and we want to see change. And we should do that plus all the other things in our communities that is necessary to make us stronger. But what we have to stop doing is looking at those of us who march and protest and say, well, that's not working. Sitting at home complaining and telling us what we're doing is not working, that's not working either. Okay. So all of us doing something together is where we need to be.
Activist Tamika Mallory, save your voice. Thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you so much. And
thank
I'm sure,
so
hopefully we'll bump into each other this weekend because we'll be out there covering this. We need to take a quick break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back with more of this conversation in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are previewing this weekend's 56th anniversary of the March on Washington. We will have seasoned and new voices heard. Lots of activism. There will be marches and all kinds of activities. But again, the issues will be the same as they were last year. Some would argue that these are the same issues that we've been talking about for the past 56 years. How do we move the needle when it comes to social justice in America? Joining me now is Dawana Thompson with Woke Vote. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are welcome to tweet me at H. Fisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dawana, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold, for having me. It's so important.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. So before we even get into the conversation, I like the name of your organization, Woke Vote. You know,
yes.
Open your eyes and go to the polls.
Yes.
But talk to me about the organization first.
Yes, well, Woke Vote was actually started in 2017 as a response to a special election in Alabama that, if you remember, Jeffrey Sessions, as I like to call him, Jeffrey Beauregard Sessions, had just been nominated by then President Trump to the Supreme Lawyer. I'm sorry, for the United States. The AG, the Attorney General.
Yes.
I cannot remember what that was at the second. But
that's all right.
We had to live with his brand of foolishness in Alabama for over 30 years before that happened. But what that did was it opened up an opportunity for us to have what we thought would be a progressive person in office. And nobody thought that we could actually do that in a state like Alabama, which means nobody wanted to put funding on the ground. Nobody thought that black voters would turn out. And so for months, we were telling telling people, look, we can do this, and no money came, no support came. And so what we did was we decided to stop looking for any help from outside of the state and to organize the people on the ground in places like the Black Belt in Selma and in places like Birmingham and Huntsville and Montgomery, where our ancestors, right, and our elders had marched previously to us. And we were able to turn out 100,000 black voters in 6 weeks to get a newly elected Democrat into office at that time. And so what we realized is that people just didn't know what the power of their vote was in this current context of the political power and the political system. And so we decided that we needed to start back investing in that political understanding and in that political organizing. And so here we are, 4 years later, still doing that work and having put over $10 million into the ground, organizing and putting money and resources behind black organizers, particularly in the South, so that they can realize the power of their vote and their responsibility and their leadership. So that's woke voting in a nutshell.
What worries you about what we are seeing in some of the Southern controlled Republican legislatures, as and I talked to Tamika about this briefly before the break, but what worries you the most as we are seeing these changes? Texas has made the big headline, but we have seen this happen in some 13 other states that have done these things, you know, rather quietly, particularly in states, I believe, in some northern Midwestern states, or where there aren't a lot of people of color, and yet these changes have still happened.
Right. What worries me the most is that it's a return to policies that we've already seen before. And in a lot of ways, the strategies that those who are enacting those policies that they're using, because people haven't paid attention to the long game, particularly progressive spaces sometimes, particularly, in my opinion, that's a critique of even the Democratic Party, haven't paid attention to sort of how those who would seek to suppress the vote and have put these strategies in place over years, it's a long game for them. And so what worries me is that we're getting activated. For some of us, we're getting activated right now, but these folks who were trying to take our rights away, they stayed activated 5 and 7 years ago. So we have got to actually double down on all of our individual tactics and efforts on all the different levels to sort of catch up, if you will, to the long game that they've been playing with the same strategy. It literally is not anything different than what they were doing with the Southern when they were taking over voting rights in the 1950s and 60s. None of the games that they're playing are different. The problem is that we thought that they had stopped playing those games and that they had stopped playing or strategizing around those tactics. And so people kind of, you know, got comfortable a little bit. And so now we just got to catch up. And so I think that there's something to be said at looking at not just the history of what we did to push the Voting Rights Act, but it's also taking some time to research what were those strategies and what were those things that were put in place that actually attacked voting rights over the last several years, and then start looking at how we overcome those things over time and come up with a long-term strategy for what has been a long-term impact.
One of the things, and I'm so glad that you're on this program, and I've spoken about this, although not recently, and I think, you know, my own personal feeling about voting and personal history about it really pinpoint what I believe people should do. We can talk about activism and organizing and everything else, and I realize that not everybody has the wherewithal to do it, but I also believe in one vote at a time, and this is what I mean by that. Since graduating from college, I have lived in 7 cities, and I have voted in every single one of them.
Yeah.
Because every time I have moved, the first thing I do is find a place to live once I got the job. I find a church.
Yep.
And then I find out what the rules are for voting. And when the next election is. And what I need to do to qualify. because even before we had these restrictions and rules and shenanigans over the past, for me, 30 years or so, this is what you do.
Right.
How do I sign up?
Voting constitution. You decided.
I decided to do it.
This is a part of who you. It's a part of how you operate. Right. It's your standard operating procedures, and that's what we're saying. It's not enough to just vote because somebody unfortunately lost their life today or last week.
Right.
We actually have to create a constitution around the strategies and tactics that get us free, that we're implementing both personally in our everyday lives, but then coming together when we have to organize corporately, when we have to, you know, go up against corporate attacks, right? But it's the everyday sort of ring of the water on the rock, right, that
yes.
gets us to a better place. And so what you just said is that you have a personal constitution around how you do these things. So what we're asking and what makes, like, the make good trouble conversation so critical and maybe even so different is that we're saying this is not about commemoration, right? We respect what has happened. We respect the leaders who have come before us. We actually are using the blueprints, right? We wouldn't be going to the Lincoln Memorial had it not been something that was significant and had impact. But we're not here to commemorate. We're actually here to make demands. We're here to say, as a citizen in this country, so you owe us something. We built this, and you owe us something. And so it's a part of my personal constitution to be activated in certain kinds of ways. For you, that's finding out where you vote, right? That's finding out mm-hmm. where you get civically involved. That's the same thing for me. I've lived everywhere, too. I've lived in other countries and still figured out, hey, well, why are they fingerprinting themselves in Ghana, West Africa, but the country votes at 94% of the whole country?
Right.
Right? You know what I'm saying? But they got to stand outside. You think we'd be standing outside. They outside in the 110-degree heat to get a fingerprint done, right? So that's a constitution because they have decided that their vote is directly aligned to how their life will be impacted, right? So I have a constitution. You have a constitution. But there are some people who are dealing with stuff every single day where voting is not initially a part of their constitution because they're still dealing with other things, right? So we have to find ways to set up that constitution for our community so that it's not an afterthought or it's not a hard thing to do. It's just a part of how we roll. And I think if we can make it more a part of how we roll and be honest about the fact that voting isn't the only way to get free, right? It is just one of the tools. It's an important tool, but it's not the only tool. So when you and I say something like, if you don't vote, something wrong with you, for some people, the first thing they're going to say back to us, Harold, is, well, I voted last time and then nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if we stopped with voting is the way we get free, then we have nothing that we can say back to that in righteousness, right? If that was the only way that we got free. So what we always have to say is that voting is a tool. It is one of our tools to liberation. And I think that helps people to then put it in its rightful place as a part of their personal constitution and the way in which they show up for their community.
Absolutely. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are previewing this weekend, of course, the 56th anniversary of the March on Washington, but there is much more, as my guest, Dawana Thompson from Woke Vote, has said. We are not looking back. We are looking forward. So you should show up and make sure that your voice is heard. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Cora on the line now. Cora, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My name is Cora Masters-Berry.
Cora. Cora. What's happening?
Well, I'm out here at the point, but I just heard that she was on the radio. And I just want to say to Washington, D.C., everybody keeps saying, who's the next leader? Tamika D. Mallory is my leader. Mm-hmm. I've listened to what she has to say. She's courageous. She doesn't just talk the talk. She walks the walk. She gets arrested down in Kentucky, where they keep them in there 15, 20 hours a day. And so I just want to say I'm going to be out there on the 28th of August. I'm going to be out there at 12 o'clock on Saturday. And I want everybody to join me.
Yes.
Because this is the march, the Make Good Trouble March. It's the march where we do something proactive, where we take a stand, where we stand in the gap. It's nice to talk about the dream, but right now we got to talk about good trouble so we can change the things that the dream was about that's not happening. The dream has turned into a nightmare. So we got to do something about that.
Cora, I appreciate your input, your words of wisdom. Yeah, we had Tamika on earlier, and we allowed her to go at 7:30. We wanted to make sure that her voice was saved.
but
I think that you're very correct in that there are multiple prongs to this fight. There are many pieces to this battle, and I think I would argue it doesn't just end with the demands being made this weekend, but it really does continue. And for some people, particularly some of the youngest people, it really begins for them.
Right.
Because there were people who weren't there last year. There were people who have never been there. I mean, we have some, as you know, last year we had some parents who brought some teenagers, or not even teenagers, but some really young ones who have no idea what this is about, but you know, over the past year have had an opportunity to really consider and to hear the DaJuana Thompsons, the Tamika Mallorys, dare I say the Cora Masters Barrys.
Yes.
And even me, dare I say, to let them know that, as DaJuana just said, you have to develop that constitution for activism, even if it is just going into the voting booth. And I remember when my daughter, who does not drive, needed to vote in Baltimore where I lived,
mm-hmm.
and where I live, and she needed to, and she was at her grandmother's house on Georgia Avenue. And I drove from Baltimore to pick her up in D.C. and drove back to Baltimore because, baby, you need to vote.
Because you know what's at stake. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about her, because she is my child,
right.
is that she knew who she was going to vote for in Baltimore, even though she was staying in D.C. because she was a Howard University student.
Yeah,
And so that it is that piece. It is that woke vote. It is that keep your eyes open and your brain in tuned and get your hips up and get to the polls, whether you do it by mail or whether you go to the polls or absentee or however you do it, to make sure that your voice is heard. Because as you were saying, DaJuana, and also as Tamika was saying earlier, you know, for the purposes of this conversation, you know, not everybody lives in a Washington, D.C., or not
That's
everybody
right.
lives in a Northern Virginia or in a Maryland where the majority of people think like you.
Right. And there's a political lens, right? I think I lived in D.C. for almost 8 years, but I'm from, born and raised in Birmingham, Alabama. And there is a considerable difference around how people are socialized into politics.
Yes.
From an early age, right? I think being in places like D.C., Baltimore, and places that are close to these political sort of epicenters, even if you aren't knowingly participating, there is a proximity to politics and sort of policy that you kind of get, you know what I mean, in these cities. When I lived here, I felt it. It just became a part of everyday conversation. And not so much sometimes when you're living in cities where that's not – where the politics is not necessarily the word of the day or the order of the day, right? It's you may come from a banking city or a medical city or an agriculture city, right? And those are the things that you think about. And so I think that it's about, again, we have a responsibility, particularly those of us who've been able to see other things and go and understand how this stuff works, which is why at Woke Vote, we actually have a fellowship where we teach people how – literally, how do you get a bill made, right? What does it mean to, what is the difference between a congressman and a senator and why, or a House of Representatives person and a senator, right? Why, like, because people have not been taught that to some extent, particularly in the South, in regular history classes in school, right, in government classes in school. And so they don't know what the difference between some of these roles. What's the difference between a prosecutor that can actually make a decision about the rest of your life versus just going before a judge for, you know, for anything else? Like, what are some of these the pieces that are at play? And so when you start teaching and breaking apart and demystifying how all of this works, people then can form, you know, better ideas around how they can themselves get activated. Well, okay, maybe I'm not sure if I'm ready to talk federal politics, but these local politics in terms of my education system, access to good health care, access to clean water, access to, you know, we have a lot of food deserts in the South, right? What does it mean to have resources to fund people who want to go into agriculture, who want to be the next wave of black farmers? All of that is political. But if you don't see it like that, if you haven't been taught that everything is political, sometimes you don't understand just the power in you showing up and having a voice in that moment. So the Tamika Mallorys of the world, to Ms. Cora's point, why she's so incredibly important is because she will lead from her comfort place, you know, from where she's comfortable, where she's built her team, and she will go to the people that need and go to the spaces that have been left out. I sat with her in Louisville last year for months, you know, where she left and we all stayed there for on the ground. They got arrested, different things. And I watched her work with local people to help them understand what the situation is in their own area and to be a partner and to bring resources. Everybody can't do that. Everybody's not going to pick up and move to another city for 3 months, right? But we need those who are ready to give their lives in a different kind of way to this work. But we also need people who are going to get activated when those people come in town or when those people leave and stay activated in their communities.
And you said something, you did say a bit of a word because you said you spent so much time in Birmingham. Look, I lived in Huntsville for two years. And so those are, when you look at the politics, and this is why people need to pay attention to what is happening in their state, because the politics in North Alabama are so much different from the politics in Birmingham.
That's right.
They were in the 90s. They still are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but they have statewide ramifications, particularly when you're electing someone to go to Capitol Hill. So I think you do definitely make an excellent point. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What do you want to see for yourself, first of all, come out of this weekend?
I would really love to see 1,000 new organizers that we actually have access to coming out of this. And the reason why I put 1,000 on it and put an actual number to it is this. What I find is that when people come to even events like this, they leave, you know, on a level where if you don't engage them immediately, it's going to start dwindling, right? When you're in the middle of that thing and you're feeling the spirit, that's the best time to connect and to get people's information, because when they leave, sometimes the energy, the spirit that they feel when they're on that, when they're at the Lincoln Memorial or when they're at that rally or when they're at that march, they don't necessarily take that home with them or at the same capacity. So the time to engage is in that moment. And what we have to then do is take those names and bring the spirit later on that week and that next week back to them and say, this is why you were there. Now let's get you organized and let's get you trained. So personally, my team and those who are a part of the Make Good Trouble rally, what I know about the Black Voters Matters and the Until Freedom and the Live Freeze and the Fun Pieces and all of these individuals, the Gathering for Social Justice, we are organizations that get involved for the long term, that meet people where they are and then help grow their consciousness and their activism and their leadership. And so if we can come out of Saturday, right, having identified 1,000 new organizers, we've got people, we are bringing, there are buses coming in with Transformative Justice Coalition. We've got over 25 to 30 something buses coming in from 21 different cities who are coming into this activity on Saturday. Can you imagine if we sent every last one of those buses back to their city and they communicated and signed up and said, you know what, I'm going to take what I just felt, and I'm actually going to organize for the next 12 months in my city. Can you imagine the kind of shift and change that will happen in those 21 cities? And then that would impact our entire country. And so we want to do as much as possible. My goal is to make sure that we connect and identify with as many people as possible on Saturday who want to do a long-term effort with us. And that's what I want to see come out of Saturday. I want that spirit that they feel on the Lincoln Memorial, because it's going to be there. Right, it's already there. We've been walking around. We've been doing site visits. Listen, I brought the spirit with me. The spirit is there, right? And we want them to have that spirit as they continue. And we want to nurture that spirit beyond. So if we can come out of this with some organizers who are activated in their communities and are going to go back to their communities and get to work, then we've done our job. We're moving forward in the spirit of those who came before us.
Now, here's something that I don't think a lot of people actually think about, because they will – you know, listen to you, they will listen to Tamika, and there will be the energy, even for people who are playing long ball.
Yeah.
And they never assume, they often assume that everything works the way that you want it to work. What are the mistakes that activists make? You know, when you kind of look back over the course of your activism, when you talk to young people coming in, what is the thing that you say, okay, don't do that? What?
You know, I don't know if we talk about mistakes. I'm not sure. I try not to categorize things as mistakes, more so like learning opportunities, right? Anybody who's doing something.
Oh, come on now. Don't give me the challenges. You know, this is a news program. But we have challenges.
Yes.
We have hills to climb. No. Y'all messed up.
You know what? I think the first thing is sometimes people move out of passion and not out of organizing, right? And so, again, how you're brought into the space, if you're socialized around an event that happened, let's take George Floyd, right? A lot of people who had never stood up to do anything and march and all of that, they were so impassioned by what they saw that instead of sort of turning to somebody who's done the work before or going somewhere where there are experienced organizers, they either started things on their own, right, and just said, hey, follow me, we care about this, and didn't really understand that there's a process to how you protest. There's a risk, right? There are all kinds of things. So they were leading people passionately, but not necessarily from an understanding about how, like, the legacy of protest, the legacy of civil disobedience, the legacy of actual resistance and disruption, right? There's ways to do it, but they led from places of passion. And so I think that sometimes is, it can be a mistake, it can be a misstep, but it can easily be rectified, right? Because once we can identify people who are leading from passion, it's very simple for us to help turn that passion into process, right? And so, but I do think that in those moments, you have a lot of people who have voices, who have been, you know, in their own cities, they may already be people who do good work and that kind of thing, but they haven't been organizers. And there is a system, there is a process of how you become a good organizer, right, and how you impact people. And so sometimes if there is a misstep, I think that might be the misstep that many of us have probably taken at some point in our life as it relates to being so passionate about something that is, you know, that you move to action and then you bring others with you. And the role of elders, quite frankly, is to identify those passionate people and to help pull that passion into policy, pull that passion into progress, pull that passion into organizing without diminishing the flame, because you wouldn't have done it that way. And that's the other mistake that I think happens, is that we, those of us who know better sometimes and who know how to do the work, sometimes do not provide the access, the space, the mentorship or whatever is needed to that passionate organizer who's just starting out, or to that passionate, you know, member of community who said, I don't know what to do, but I got to do something, and I got 50 people that's coming with me. And yes, maybe I messed up, but don't beat me across the head for it. That's what they're doing. I need you to actually bring me in. mentor me, teach me, invest in me. And so those are the two things that I think that we can look at as sometimes mistakes, but also as opportunities to do some good work moving forward.
You said this is the long game. What's the what's the end game?
You know what? For me, the end game is actual liberation. Now, the reality of that is we have, you know, what we call a set of demands that we're reminding America about this weekend. Demands like restoring voting rights, you know, things like reparations and raising the minimum wage and things of that nature, ending mass incarceration. To me, the end game is realizing a system then that allows for that to be done in perpetuity. The issue is that right now we're in a system that never had an end game, never had a game, if you will, for people like me, for black women, for marginalized communities. The game, actually, I take that back, they had a system, but it didn't include me. It was a system that was set for only a very small amount of people. So to me, liberation is a system that actually sees, acknowledges, that actually is responsible to, and self-governs their process of how everybody in this country can live the quality of life that they should be assured. Now, does that mean think that everybody's going to be able to live, you know, in a $100,000 mansion or a $100,000 house? No, but if you are a person who ascribes to that, you should be able to do that and have no issues because you may be a person in the LGBT community, or you may be a person that, you know, you shouldn't have any issues with your government because in your pursuit of living your best life, as long as you are doing it in a way that is honest and righteous, right? And so that is to me what the end game is. It's a liberation that when I walk out the door, I can breathe. Mm-hmm. I can do what I need to do, and we're just not there, and it's going to take some work to get there.
You know, $100,000 goes a whole lot further in Birmingham than it goes in D.C.
Listen, $100,000 can barely give me rent for the year.
How about that? Dewana Thompson with Woke Vote. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your input. We also want to thank Tamika Mallory for sharing some time with us. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, August 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.